everyone, Paula V here, and welcome to Why Am I So Happy? Joining me today is Benjamin Leto, and he is the founder of Body Mind Fitness. Benjamin is a NASM certified personal trainer. He's a NASM corrective exercise specialist. He has a BA in philosophy. He has created such an amazing source of nutrition and training. He's just a great scope of caring and training of his clients. I just fell in love with what he offers everyone and his techniques. So I'm just... Benjamin, I have to say welcome. I'm just so, so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you, Paula V. I promise everyone did not pay her to say all those nice things.
Yay! I'm just such a big fan. I could go on and on. But we're here to listen to you. So, Benjamin, start with, if you would, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what brought you into what you do, this passion.
Yeah. Well, you know, like a lot of guys did and still do in their teenage years, I got really into bodybuilding. I loved it. And within the span of a few years, I put on about 50 or 60 pounds of muscle. So I was kind of making the progress I wanted to make. You know, fitness was a big part of my life. I trained actually with some top-notch amateur bodybuilders that were literally ranked at the national level. I met some pro bodybuilders. Now, of course, I took the healthy route, but I didn't get into steroids or anything like that. But I loved the sport. I loved getting in shape. I loved it. I learned all the normal ways of building muscle, building strength, losing fat. And the problem was, when I was in my early 20s already, I was starting to have some serious joint problems to the point that I couldn't do certain exercises with even 5 pounds. So it looked kind of odd at the gym when I was this kind of big guy. I couldn't even do 5 pounds on certain exercises. I'd be next to a guy who was a lot skinnier than me. And he was lifting a lot more weight. I found out later on that was a result of a rare genetic disorder I have called cleidocranial dysplasia. And about 1 in 1 million people have that. So it's very rare, obviously. And because of its rarity, there's very little research done on it. And thus, very little advice from the medical community on how to treat it or how to work with it. It's essentially defined by various skeletal problems. So the biggest one is having little to no collarbone. So I have about half a collarbone. Before I worked out, I could actually touch my shoulders together. The problem with that is you also have scoliosis, some hips problems, some knee problems. So I had problems in every joint. And the problem, especially with the collarbone, with having less bone there, is there's less structure there. And so the shoulders just pop all over the place. So with all the heavy weights I was doing, my shoulders were in and out of socket, all these problems. And so by the time I was in my 20s, I could barely lift my arms in certain directions, constant pain, my arm went numb, and I started having some similar knee problems. Well, 5 or 6 orthopedic surgeons later and several physical therapists later and 2 surgeries later, I was in even worse shape. I was told by my very last orthopedic surgeon at 25 years old that I was hopeless. I shouldn't hike. I shouldn't work out. And at the time, I could not lift my left arm over my head. I could not do a bodyweight squat. Stairs hurt me. Sitting up and down hurt me. Jogging I couldn't do. So that was going to be quite the life that I was going to be kind of destined to, so to speak. And I wasn't going to settle with that. So I did a lot of research over the course of a few years. Eventually, I found after technique, I found, a revolutionary way of approaching the body that healed me. So now I don't have any of those problems anymore, and I found pretty quickly that what healed me healed others as well, and as soon as one session. And not fully in one session, but people that were in similar boats as me told they weren't going to get healed by various medical professionals. I had them on the right track at least within a few weeks. So
I
you know, I can't cure everybody, obviously, but just find that what I found was immensely helpful for both myself and others, and that kind of amounted to the training and diet program I now have in Body Mind Fitness.
Yes, I love that, and I have read some of the testimonials on your website, and what you have done for others as well, Benjamin, is amazing. So,
yeah, thank you.
Please, oh, you're so welcome. Please share. So, break down exactly what you mean by the body, mind, fitness.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of a weird phrase, especially hearing body, mind. We usually hear mind, body, you know, like the mind body connection, right. Or a lot of times in yoga, they might say mind, body in various usages. But, the Buddha actually called it the body-mind, that when one is mindful or aware of one's mind, of all the emotions and thoughts going on, and mindful of your body, aware of your body, you actually start to experience it all as one unit. And this one unit, he called the body-mind. Now, there are others who call it body-mind, of course, but that's where I got the term. I meditated for a while in college, and then following college, I actually moved to I live in a Zen Buddhist monastery, and I meditated up to 14 hours a day there. It was a very intense lifestyle, to say the least. And I was there for a little while, and Zen Buddhism really emphasizes the meditation aspect of Buddhism. So they meditate especially a lot. So, you know, my experience in meditation helped me see firsthand how it helps, and specifically how it applies to working out. So my idea is to bring the kind of mindfulness that comes from meditation into working out, because when you think about it, if there's any moment in time where you want to be mindful, it's probably when you had heavy weights over your head. But a lot of people think they can just pop into the gym, put on some heavy, you know, some loud music and just kind of lift these heavy things up and down, and they're going to be fine. But reality is these movements are complex movements, and unless you put in the training to really master the movement, and that's done with a lot of mindfulness, you're going to injure yourself. You know, no violinist ever got good at the violin by doing something once or twice a week for two or three sets super hard, right? They do it day in and day out, again and again and again and again and again. And they do it, you know, paying attention to everything they're doing. And it's the same thing with working out. The difference is that the violinist, of course, the violinist messes up, he doesn't, you know, injure a shoulder permanently or injure a knee permanently or bring, you know, hurt a vertebrae, whereas with working out you do, which is why mindfulness is especially important. And if it's not a practiced part of your life, it can be very difficult to be mindful when you've got heavy weights over your head.
Oh, yes, exactly. And we will discuss this further in the next segment, but do you recommend with your training, do you bring nutrition into it as well? Nutrition and attitude, you know, the mindfulness, all of that. You bring it all together, don't you?
I do, yeah. Again, that kind of goes with body-mind, right? They're all one unit. You know, when I was first getting into personal training, I was told, you know, if you don't, you know, just focus on giving them workouts. They want to get a diet, they can go somewhere else. If they want to unload on you emotionally, they can get a counselor. But, I don't know, me personally being a perfectionist and wanting something done right, for me requires that I do everything possible to make it done right. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I cared about people. I didn't see him as just this person I was getting money from. So, okay, you know, thanks for your money. Session's over. Get out of here.
Right.
I actually valued him. So, and I knew from firsthand experience, you need to have all these aspects integrated together to be an effective trainer and to make the pathway to health, you know, realistic and sustainable. So, yeah, I definitely bring nutrition into it. I mean, it's about as important as gas is for a car. So, and nutrition affects your mind state for sure. And your mind state affects nutrition. We all know that when we're stressed, we eat bad foods, right?
Right.
And that starts a cycle. So, yeah, I feel like clients with me kind of get a really holistic experience in the sense that I try to incorporate all these aspects of life into your training, because they all affect your training. If you got a lot on your mind, it's going to be very difficult to concentrate when you're at the gym.
Right.
So, and that's where mindfulness again comes in, learning to let things go when necessary so that you can focus on what you need to focus on.
Right. Yes. Yes. And I love that analogy. Nutrition is like putting gas in the car, because, you know, I see that, you know, with, if I work out, then, oh, I've done my workout, I'm going to go and I'm just going to put this basic garbage food in my body. No, you really do need the whole picture, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And that kind of working out, I think, is symptomatic of our mentality in modern society, that nothing should really be that inconvenient. Everything should be somewhat comfortable. So as long as I do a little bit here and a little bit there, I'm good. So I can eat whatever I want to eat as long as I go to the gym for 30 or 40 minutes a day.
Right.
But that kind of lifestyle where you're bouncing back from extremes is, A, not very sustainable. I don't know many people who actually live that way for a long period.
Yes.
Eventually, they just kind of like, I'm not going to go to the gym anymore.
Yeah.
And B, if you actually are willing to start bringing in your exercise with your nutrition, to create a healthy lifestyle, it's just so much more pleasurable. It actually makes you happier.
Yes.
So a lot of people think being healthy is just another stress to life. And that's frankly how most people in the health industry present it. You know, well, if you were really dedicated and if you really had discipline, you would do this too. And that's just ridiculous. I mean, I know firsthand how busy modern life is, and I'm not even married and I don't even have a family.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I had those things on top of it, it's crazy. So
it
has to be something. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, Paula V.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. You're busy. You know, that is a fact. Yes.
Right. So adding in yet another chore is, of course, not going to be desirable. People are going to put it off, and they're not going to last. So this has to be a change in your lifestyle,
yes,
a positive change in your lifestyle, so that it's actually sustainable. And this, again, comes back to the whole body-mind concept, that your mind can only take so much stress. So I'm going to sit here and try to add another stress on top of that. You're going to go crazy. I would go crazy. Everybody would go crazy. But if we remember that we're and I'll probably talk about this a bit in the second segment, but that we are embodied beings, meaning we have these bodies wherever we go, I think it helps keep our priorities straight. You know, society wants us to think that this job's important, that's important, that's important, that's important. But your body is more important. I'm sorry. It's hard to – you can't do anything if your body's not working.
Yes, I agree.
So the body has to be a priority. And I try to help my clients see that, so that their lifestyle kind of starts to revolve around that.
I love that. I love that. Oh, Benjamin, yes, fantastic information. I'm afraid we must pop out to a commercial. Thank you so much. Everyone, we stay tuned. I'll be right back with Benjamin. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Paula V here. Benjamin and I are sharing some great information about his body-mind fitness. And Benjamin, let's just jump right back in. I would love to have you share with us your thoughts on, you know, the messages that our bodies give us. It's my understanding, you know, we have urges. We can be hungry. We can be thirsty. And really, we can read those urges wrong, and let's say we feel like we're hungry, but really we might be dehydrated. Is that correct?
Right. Oh, that's absolutely correct, yeah. You know, I kind of compare it to, you know, the Buddha talked about developing the gift of discernment. Well, not the gift of discernment, but developing the ability to discern things, you know, right from wrong, or to see things as they are. And that, he said, came about through a regular practice of mindfulness. And it's the same things with their own body, that if we don't have that regular practice, we can mistake certain urges for other urges. And also there's a simple fact that bad foods, and especially a lot of the, kind of unnatural chemicals we put into our bodies today, these actually trick our bodies into not recognizing certain things for what they are. So, a good example is, corn syrup acting as a sweetener, or, artificial sweetener acting as a sugar. These kind of things kind of trick our bodies, right? But when the body has a steady intake of food that's not good for it, it stops being able to recognize what it actually does need. It's very similar to somebody who smokes, right? I don't know a single person who ever said, "Oh yeah, that first cigarette, I loved it." Usually, it's, "Oh, it's disgusting, it's nasty." But they a lot of times immediately get nauseated. But after a few cigarettes, suddenly the body starts liking it, and eventually it starts craving it, and eventually it becomes so addictive that it almost can't stop, and people literally lose their lives because the addiction to it is so strong.
Yes.
But in the initial stage, it was actually something the body rejected, didn't want. And it's the same thing with our diet. The problem is most of us, I'm kind of giving you a mouthful here, I hope you don't mind.
Yes, no, love most it, of us, Benjamin, love it.
Most of us have had bad food for such a long period, our body's ability to sense what food it actually needs is so off that it's helpful to have a trainer to at first say, okay, here's what you eat, here's what you don't eat. But ideally, when our bodies are functioning properly, they're actually, for the most part, only craving the foods that are actually healthy for you. And this might sound kind of extreme or completely unbelievable, but it is true. If you imagine any other animal in the animal kingdom, they pretty much only crave what's good for them. I mean, it's hard to imagine lions, for instance, sitting in the field and really wishing, oh, I really want those leaves over there, but I just can't. I'm watching my weight. Right? No, of course not. We're made to crave the food that's good for us. So someone could respond and say, well, cake, cookies, that's not good for me. Cake and cookies themselves are not, but what they have are nutrients in them that your body's wanting. So if you're creating bad foods, what that tells me as a trainer is that's indicative of nutrients that you actually need. So the biggest one is healthy fat. That's actually the macronutrient your body needs the most of. But we're programmed to think fat is bad for you. And in some sense, that programming is accurate because most of the fat in American diet is unhealthy fat. And that fat is not good for you. But if you're getting in healthy fat, for instance, you might find you stop craving cake, cookies, bread, things like that that aren't good for you. So the point of saying all that is ideally, healthy living is not a constant war with these urges and these cravings you're having. It's actually looking into these urges and cravings and seeing where they come from, solving the problem at that level. Suddenly the cravings stop going away, and suddenly eating healthily is actually pretty effortless. So that's how healthy eating is sustainable. If you're doing these diets where you're just having these cravings left and right, but you got to eat this certain way, that's not going to last. And there's a reason why your cravings go so high when you're eating these supposed healthy diets. It's because these healthy diets are low in nutrients your body actually does need. And your body knows, well, hey, I get at least some fat from cake, so I'm going to crave cake.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, because really our body does need some fat, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, all the organ functions in your body, basic functioning, brain function, heart function, skin, that comes from fat, not from carbs. Carbs are more energy for actual fuel, working out, exercise, but energy your body needs for its own maintenance, which is doing 24/7, as opposed to exercise, you're not exercising 24/7. Your body needs fat and needs a lot of it, but healthy fat, fats like an olive oil, stuff like that. That's a really healthy fat. I mean, there's a reason that Mediterraneans tend to be longer living, healthier hearts, less disease, better skin, better hair. It's because their diets are really high in healthy fats. They're getting in good fatty fruits. They're getting in healthy fat in their meats. They're eating a lot of fish. So
excellent.
Islander diets have a lot of the same things.
Yes.
So, fat's definitely essential.
Yes, I love that. I love that. So when we realize that we can really connect with our body and understand these urges, that can make a big difference on our overall bottom line of our health, correct?
Oh, hugely, yeah. And, you know, my goal is to make all my clients an expert on their own bodies, so that ideally they don't need me anymore. So if you can learn to say, oh, hey, okay, I'm craving this food, what did Benjamin teach me that indicates that, well, you know, the kind of nutrients I'm looking for?
Yes.
You start asking yourself those questions, and you say, okay, I'm craving this food. Oh, that means I'm lacking in, you know, A, B, and C nutrients. Oh, okay, so I need to add that into my diet. So your cravings are kind of a signpost as to what's, you know, right or wrong in your diet.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And Benjamin, please take a moment on that topic. Share with the listeners what you offer and your website, possibly your email, how they can get a hold of you to do some sessions with you and gain from your
sure.
amazing experience and knowledge.
Yeah, thanks.
Awesome.
Well, my website is trainingwithbenjamin.com. So again, it's trainingwithbenjamin.com. My email is trainingwithbenjamin@gmail.com. Again, that's trainingwithbenjamin@gmail.com. You know, if you're in the States, you're welcome to call me at 717-357-1248. And what I offer is, you know, the very basics. I offer personal training nutrition programs. But I think it's obvious from this session that I kind of offer a whole lot more than that. So I have people kind of call me almost health coach or something like that, but health coach has other connotations. But, I mean, I offer meditation instruction because I have all my clients meditate. That for me, and not necessarily in any religious way, so I don't want anybody to think that I'm, you know, trying to convert anybody to something or not. But it's a great way of learning to calm the mind and connect with the body, which is essential to all the things we talked about here, essential to figuring out how your body needs to move and the kind of foods your body needs, right, and learning to read its urges.
Yes.
So I offer that, and, you know, obviously exercise programs, diet programs. I regularly do Skype sessions with clients all over the country, you know, with all their health needs, essentially. And we even discuss lifestyle changes that are impeding their health, and even some psychological stuff, because the reality is when you're going through a lot of stuff personally, you know, most trainers will just say, okay, well, get over it, okay, be disciplined. But the reality is that does affect your health, and that needs to be discussed and helped as well. So, yeah, I kind of have a very holistic approach. So that's what I offer, both, you know, sessions to locals and then online sessions.
Oh, that is so fantastic, Benjamin. So fantastic.
Yeah, thanks.
With you, they don't just get a piece of the pie. They get the whole pie. And it sounds like you really connect with people individually on their needs and improving their own lives.
Yeah, I really try to do that, you know. I'm a big perfectionist. So for me, if I'm not doing something right, I'm not happy with it. And that requires being intensely focused for me on one person at a time and really getting into all your personal needs. So I'm not I don't train people with generic kind of, you know, guidelines at all. And, I try to give everyone the experience they're looking for.
Oh,
so.
I love it. I love it. Oh, that is just such a great thing to offer. And, you know, today, so many people, really, I think more and more people every day are wanting to be healthier, but really aren't
right.
sure how.
Right.
So you
yeah,
are
it's,
a great tool.
It's, yeah, I would think so, you know, and it came about through years of research on my end of being really into bodybuilding when I was young and to learning the mainstream ways of working out and getting in shape, realizing that those mainstream ways tend to cause a lot of injury. If you go to a gym and talk to any guy who works out seriously, he'll tell you about this joint problem and that joint problem and that joint problem. And these are guys in their 20s, not in their 50s or 60s or 70s or 80s. They're 20s.
Yes.
So you can think about what their life's going to be like when they're twice that age. And then I had the medical community really frankly fail me in a lot of ways. When I was 25 years old, couldn't lift my arm over my head, couldn't do a bodyweight squat, couldn't jog. So I was really forced to look at the body in a whole new way. And I'm glad I did. I healed all my problems. I healed clients who come to me, and a lot of them are told they're never going to heal from this or that. And within weeks, they're already seeing progress with me. Sometimes literally within a session or two. I don't want to promise anything, but that's, you know, that's the kind of results I've seen.
Oh, amazing. Amazing, Benjamin. Oh,
well, thank you.
I'm afraid our time is up. I have to say goodbye. I want to thank you so much for this fantastic show and being a guest.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. I really am honored to have you on the show, Benjamin.
Yeah, thank you, Paula V. Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, thank you. And to everyone, goodbye. Big hugs. A happy day to everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Why Am I So Happy? Paula V here. Today, joining us is Robert Hudson. And Robert is the creator of Oregon Dog Life in the state of Oregon. He is a pet lifestyle expert. Oh, I just love that, Robert. I love that. And I want to begin with thanking you for being with us today. I'm really honored to have you on the show. And please tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you into being a pet lifestyle expert.
Oh, my. Well, I've always loved pets ever since I was a child, and as a kid growing up, I had all kinds of pets, from dogs and cats to mice, rabbits, and goldfish, and gerbils and hamsters. You know, I mean, you name it, I had it as a kid. I even had a snake I brought home one day that my mother didn't like very much. And you know, as I got into my adult years and, you know, was struggling to find my own way of life and whatnot as a single person, I found it rather difficult to have a dog in apartment life. So I had cats instead. So for years and years, I had cats. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, I decided, I was living in a place where I found out I could have a dog if I wanted to, a small dog. So I thought, oh, great, you know. By this time, I'm in my 40s, and I thought, hey, well, it's never too late to have a dog. I want a dog. I'm going to have a dog. And I still have him. He's about 6 or 7 years old now. His name's Buster Boy. And you know, I couldn't imagine what sort of impact he would have on my life. I mean, it's just been wonderful. And through that, I started blogging about pets, and I just became more and more interested in the relationship that we have with our pets, and what kind of things we share with them, and that sort of thing. And I guess that's what kind of got me into the area of being a pet lifestyle expert, as I like to call it. So.
I love it. I love it. Well, let's chat a little bit about, you know, relationships that we have with our dogs, you know, and the joy that brings us.
Sure. Well, you know, we've all heard about the role that dogs play in comforting hospital patients, the elderly, you know, service dogs, therapy dogs, and so forth. So we know that at least some dogs have that affinity for touching people's lives, you know, people that are strangers to them, that are people other than their own handler or owner, and other than the person that they have a bond with. But we don't talk very much about the bond itself that we have with our own dogs and how much of a difference it makes in our lives. And it's really quite profound. It's so much more than just filling a gap for those people who are lonely or living a more isolated life. I mean, everyone, regardless of their lifestyle or their family life or whatever, everyone who has a dog is somehow touched by the relationship that they have with the dog, really in a deep way. And our relationship with dogs goes back thousands of years to the beginning of man's development of a civilization. You know, we evolved together from the first submissive wolves that became scavengers instead of hunters and started following, you know, these marauding bands of humans. The relationship evolved into something more complex and mutually beneficial. And most any dog is completely trusting and dependent on the human and forgiving. It's just a very deep bond that we have with them. And even dogs that suffer, you know, abuse by their owners are still bonded to them, and they still look to them for guidance, for support, for emotional for their own emotional well-being. And it's just us that sometimes just destroys that bond or ignores it or whatever. But the dog is always going to be there for you no matter what.
And if
you like, I can tell you a little bit about the relationship I've had with my dog. For the last few years, the last 5 years or so, I've had kind of a rough time, and it's been a rough part of my life where I had, you know, problems keeping a roof over my head and you know, keeping my life in a positive direction. And my dog really helped to ground me through all of this and to look beyond myself and care about something besides myself. He's taught me patience, compromise, and really just made me a better person all the way around. And I think that is a typical, really, of most dog owners. And it's not just obsession. It's not when someone's obsessed by their dog. You know, we all have this kind of image in our head of the crazy cat lady who just has a house full of cats that she can never take care of properly, that she's just – where these people are just obsessed over their pets. And there are people like that that have dogs too. You know, there are obsessive people that – obsess over their dogs, or they're hoarders, you know, and they just can't see what their the negative impact that they're having on their dogs. But that's not what a deeply bonded relationship is. It's not about obsession, but really instead it's a respect for the animal and a total appreciation of the relationship you have with them.
Yes, yes. And the love that our dogs have for us, you know, it's as you said, I mean, they forgive us, they give us unconditional love, they're so grateful, and I mean, it's priceless what we can receive from a relationship from a pet dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. And it's it's a learning experience. Not everybody is the best dog parent. You know, just like not everyone is the best parent for children. But you know, as I said earlier, regardless the dog doesn't know that, and. All you need to do, all anyone needs to do, is just open themselves up to enjoy the relationship and the bond, and to do things to enrich that relationship. And we can talk about that too, if you like. So,
yes, yes, I would love that, because that it really enriches our life to have a beautiful relationship like mm-hmm. that in our life.
Yeah, and I think that's why most dog owners find things to do, find activities that they can share with their dog that they know that their dog enjoys doing as well as themselves. Whether it be something just as simple as taking the dog out for a walk, walking through the park, things that are low stress exercise for the human, you know, particularly for older people. But it's still a bonding experience that you can share with your dog, whether it just be that or something more vigorous for that younger people like to do, going hiking or taking your dog swimming if your dog likes the water. My dog, he's a little 20-pound mutt that's part beagle, corgi, American Eskimo, and God knows what else. He's a little bundle of energy, and I discovered when he was about 2 years old that with a little coaxing, he liked the water, and he would go venture into the water, and eventually he started swimming, and he had a grand old time. And unlike many dogs that will, if they go in the water, it's just to retrieve something. You can throw something out in the water, and they'll bring it back to you. He would venture out in the water and swim around in circles, just for the sake of swimming. I mean, he loved it. As long as there weren't any distractions around, other dogs or other people or something, he would just focus on swimming, and he had a grand old time doing it. So I would take him to a local park here in Oregon that has it's close to the Willamette River, and there's a slough there that. It's kind of a slow-moving body of water, and allow him just to go in it and swim to his heart's content and play around and have a great time. And when he wasn't swimming, he would stay close to the shore and dig holes underwater and then stick his face down in the water to it was just comical and it was. It was fun to see him doing something that he enjoyed, and yes. I think he appreciates me giving him that opportunity as well.
Yes, and it made you so happy to be a part of that. I love it. I love it. Well, oh my gosh, Robert, I'm afraid we have to pop out to a commercial, but everyone,
alrighty.
We will be right back. Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
You bet.
Hello, everyone. Paula V here. If you're just tuning in, I am chatting today with Robert Hudson, the creator of Oregon Dog Life. And Robert's been sharing some fun thoughts on the joy and wonderful relationship he has with his dog. And he's going to share some methods of entertaining our dogs that we can all take in. And I have to share quickly myself, for those of you, the listeners out there that know me from my Voice America show, For the Love of Reiki, I actually began my Reiki energy healing work almost 10 years ago because of the love of my dog. I had a white shepherd named Shotzi who owned my heart, and she was ill. And what learning that Reiki did for her, it was fantastic. And all my dogs are rescues, and they all just love the Reiki. So it's so fun to chat about this, Robert. So let's begin. Share some of those fun methods that you know of that we can all use in entertaining and having fun and creating just joy in our life with our pets.
Sure. Well, before the break, I was talking a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you can do with your dog that your dog enjoys, and you know, outdoor activities and that sort of thing, and you know, besides going to the park and taking your dog swimming or hiking, there are also dog sports that you can get involved with, such as agility training. There's what's becoming more popular here in Oregon, and I think in Washington as well, is truffle hunting, where you can train your dog to sniff out truffles in the woods and dig up truffles. So, and there's weight pulling competitions for larger dogs, which is particularly good for pit bulls and strong dogs. Competitions where you can see how much weight the dog can pull on a harness and that sort of thing. And there's dock diving where the dogs jump off of docks into water. And, there's all sorts of fun things. And I try to cover all of these things or talk about them, feature them on my website, OregonDogLife.com. But there's also things that you can share with your dog at home, either indoors or outdoors, with new technology, new gadgets and toys and so forth. And there's something called the iFetch, which is a ball throwing machine where you put tennis balls in this machine and it spits them out just like what you would see at some tennis courts, I guess. But it's very small, compact, lightweight. I think it's made out of plastic, so it doesn't weigh very much and easy to cart around. But it shoots the ball out like 10 or 20 feet or something. And the dog races after it, brings it back, and can drop it in the machine himself and wait for it to spit it back out again, so you don't even have to throw the ball if you don't want.
I love that. My dogs would love that. They're into the tennis balls. I love that. I'm going to check that out.
And there's new products coming out that are going through, these public crowdfunding to get their production going and so forth. Lots of exciting new stuff that I've seen coming out on the horizon where they're interactive toys where like if you're at work through a Wi-Fi connection and a camera that's all part of a toy, you can remotely control this toy like this ball. You can make it move around the room with the dog chasing after it, and you're not even there. I mean, you're at work. There's
how fun is that?
And there's other things along that line, cams for dog with a little camera that's around the dog's neck on his collar, where you can see what he's doing from work or from a remote location, and you can even communicate with the dog that way so they hear your voice. There's all sorts of neat things like that. And as we get information about them, we're going to feature them on the website, OregonDogLife.com as well. So.
Oh, I love that idea. And especially for those that are, on the job, away from the home, 10 hours, 11 hours a day, they can communicate, they can keep an eye on, they can create things for the dog to be playing and have fun. That's a fantastic idea. I love it.
And you can also see if your dog is, what he's doing when you're not there. If you ever wondered what kind of mischief he might be getting into, if he's going to, pull food out of the refrigerator tear up chew a hole in the couch or something. I mean, you can actually catch him in the act of doing it. So,
yeah.
With some of these
part
devices.
Of the house but, he hangs out in.
Yeah. And it helps these kind of interactive remote devices can actually help your dog deal with separation anxiety.
Yes.
And kind of curb unwanted behavior. So there's all sorts of cool stuff out there that's with this age that we live in with technology. There's just so many different things out there that weren't there when I was a kid.
Yes, and I was just thinking that myself. If you just have one dog, they can get lonely or have some anxiety with you away for so long. And with these devices, you can communicate a little bit or play a little bit. That can make a whole difference for your dog.
Sure.
Yes. Oh, how
absolutely
fun! How fun! And it's there's so much we can do for the dogs and, have fun with the toys and what we create. But, as we chatted about earlier, just having that relationship with our dogs and the love that we have, that is just so fulfilling and so priceless, isn't it, Rob?
Oh, indeed it is. And the internet can really help us to appreciate that relationship more. It gives us various ways to find new ways to appreciate your dog, to find products like I was talking about, to learn more about dog behavior and how to understand your dog's behavior better, training issues. There's just so much more out there at our fingertips now than 15, 20 years ago.
Yes.
And it really helps us to strengthen that bond even more that we have with our dogs, I think.
Yes, yes. And how fun to be able to do all these new things for our dog and mm-hmm. enhance the fun we have with them. I love it. I love it.
So you have a dog, Paula?
I actually have three
wow.
rescues. Yes. And one of them I rescued from Mexico. Mm. Yes. Yes.
That's wonderful that you're willing to do that. And that's what everybody should do is take in a rescue dog.
Yeah.
What kind of dogs are they?
I have the one from Mexico. Boy, I don't know. I think maybe Brindle. She's brown. And oh my gosh, the happiness she has, her toys. She sleeps with me every night. Then I have a shepherd who you can see on my show page with BBS. She's got a touch of coyote in her. She had been very abused and had injuries. And she's the sweetest, most loving dog. And then I have another one that I rescued that's like a collie mix. She was very malnourished and I think had never been inside a home before. And she's a big lover. And isn't it fun how, I don't know if you've seen this, Robert, but like our three dogs, the one is very attached to my husband. One is just in love and attached to one of my sons. And then my Mexico girl, she just follows me everywhere. Isn't it funny how they kind of connect with someone? It's so adorable.
Yeah, in a multi-person household, I think that's probably pretty common where mm-hmm. if you have multiple dogs as well, where each one kind of relates to a different person or in a different way,
And the dogs are so, they're so sensitive, I believe. Like my Mexico dog, I was feeding her for a few days. I found her, wandering the streets looking for food. And there was a police station nearby and they said I could bring her food. And they said, but she doesn't let anyone near. And after a few days, she literally let me go up to her, put a rope around her neck, and I took her to the Humane Society. I mean, dogs can sense people that care, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think dogs are very well attuned to to what's around them. They don't understand language, of course, and they don't have reasoning skills per se, but instinctually they have emotions and they can feel and appreciate just like we do, to base emotions, to love, to I don't think they understand hate though, or feel hate, because as I said, they live in the moment. They don't judge. They don't, they suffer fear issues, but they don't hold a grudge. They don't associate it, with the feeling of hate. If that makes sense,
right.
You know what I mean.
They're above that. They don't lower to that vibration. I agree. Oh.
Yeah.
I love everything that you do in helping others with their dog relationships and the fun you have. And I really recommend all of the listeners today to check out OregonDogLife.com and learn more about Robert and what he does. I am afraid we are out of time, Robert. Any last words you'd like to tell the listeners before we go?
Oh, I appreciate so much you giving me the opportunity to come on here and speak with you. It is indeed a very pleasurable experience, and I hope maybe you'll ask me to come back again.
Yes, I think so, and I love that. I would love to have you on again, Robert. And I thank you so much. And a big thank you to all of our listeners out there. And big hugs, blessings, and a happy day to everyone. And I will chat with you at the next show. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye, Robert.
Woof.
Woof, woof.